Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Practically Happy, the podcast that helps you apply the science of well-being to your everyday life. I'm your host, Miranda Anderson, a master of applied positive psychology, here to help you access some strategies for lasting happiness and fulfillment. Each week, we'll dive deep into the latest research and insights from the world of positive psychology. But this isn't just another academic lecture. Practically Happy is about getting practical. I will share how you might apply these findings to your everyday life so you can experience real and tangible improvements in your happiness. As a wife and mom of three, I understand the challenges of juggling a busy family life while striving for personal well-being. That's why I'll also be sharing my own stories and experiences along the way. Because let's face it, life can get messy. Through it all, we can find and create intentional moments of joy. So whether you're looking for ways to boost your mood, improve your relationships, or simply add more enjoyment to your daily routines, Practically Happy is your guide to a practical, happy life. Hey, welcome back to Practically Happy. You're listening to episode number 284, Mother's Day and Mind Reading. This upcoming week, we celebrate Mother's Day, which is such an fun and can be very complicated as a holiday. Not everyone is a mother, but everyone has a mother. That said, not everyone has a great relationship with their mother or a currently living present mother. I didn't realize until well into my adulthood that Mother's Day carried a lot of weight for many women. And I think that it's important to both acknowledge that and to take ownership over the way that we would like to feel and experience Mother's Day in our own lives, regardless of the situation and relationships in which we find ourselves. So today I wanted to talk about the curious and interesting history of Mother's Day. As I was preparing for this episode, I was digging in a little bit and learned a lot of things that I didn't know about Mother's Day that I think more than anything is for curiosity and interest's sake. And then I want to talk a little bit about mind reading and how to set yourself up for a successful celebration or acknowledgement of Mother's Day if that's what you want in your life. Today's segment to kick us off is going to be a quick peeks of the week. In this segment, peeks of the week, I like to share few things that have been bringing me joy lately, some favorites, things that I'm noticing are adding a lot of happiness to my life. And today I want to share a couple things that could be fun Mother's Day gifts to yourself. Because as we're going to talk about later, it's okay to choose the things that you want to celebrate and to experience, you know, this fun holiday. The first one actually was a birthday gift that Dave gave me of a record player. I don't know, just in the last couple of years, I've gotten more interested in records and record players. I think that they are trending upward. I, of course, grew up in a house where, you know, in the 70s, 80s, most houses had a record player. That was kind of the go-to music medium of the time. And my father, who was a musician, still is a musician, avid guitar player, he played the bass in a band in college. He had a massive record collection, and I grew up listening to favorite classic rock and folk music played on his record player, his stereo system. Well, I love music. I'm not a invested musician myself anymore. I used to sing a lot. I can play a couple songs on the guitar, slowly pluck them out. But for the most, I'm a music appreciator. I really like listening to music. I love going to listen to live music. All of that to say that this idea of having a record player to play an album start to finish, have kind of the grit and earthiness of record versus digital music has been really fun. So Dave knew that I was interested in this, found a record player for me. It ended up not working out, the first one that he bought for me, because of our cats. You had to have the top open, and our cats thought that the records were like toys. So I did a little bit investigating. I was able to return the original record player gift, and the one that I found, I absolutely love. It's a record player that has a closed clear top so that the record can be spinning with like my cat laying on top of it. And then there are included but separate speakers. So they attach to the back of the record player itself, but you can put them in different sections of the room. I have mine on different shelves than the record player. So it can kind of create a little bit of a surround sound. You can line them all up if you want, so it looks like one big stereo system. I love the style of it. Mine is white. I think it also comes in like a wood tone. It's very, you know, mid-century, 60s, 70s looking, which also feels a little bit like clean line, modern. It's cool and plays records beautifully. And so I've had fun not only having this record player, but also it's become part of my daily routine to put on an album in the morning and just kind of turn it on low and let it play through. And then also around dinner time, or if someone's coming over in the evening, we'll just kind of wind down by putting on some background music that we can sing along to that just feels really nice. So I'll link that record player in the show notes if you're interested in one. I've had a couple of people ask me about it on Instagram when I've shared about it. So I am loving it, and I'll share that link in the show notes. My second peak of the week, and something I'm really loving right now, is a particular type of rose bush that I planted probably 2.5 years ago now, right when about the time that we moved into this house, maybe that first spring. It's called the Plum Perfect Rose. I found it in a catalog called Heritage Roses. And of course, I was drawn to it because my daughter's name is Plum, and we like having plum things around. So we ordered this beautiful Plum Perfect Rose. It is a floribunda, which means that it's supposed to have lots of blossoms on it. And it is self-cleaning, meaning that you don't have to deadhead it. Like, as the flowers bloom, they also shed their own petals and new blossoms form without you having to clip off the other ones. The company that makes Plum Perfect is called Sunbelt. I don't know anything really about these different companies, but I can say that the first year I planted it, it had probably half a dozen beautiful blossoms, these, you know, roses, even though it was little. Like, I mean, it comes bare root, so it was just sticks when it came, basically. And that same season, it had half a dozen roses and was maybe a foot tall. It was so cute. The next season, it had a few more roses, and also I had to take out a tree that was nearby, and so I had to dig it up, put it into a bucket, like a planter bucket, basically. And so it lived in container for a year. And I was a little bit skeptical about how any of these rose bushes, I had four that I had to do that to because this giant oak tree in our backyard had to come out and the rose bushes were planted around it. I didn't know how they would overwinter being in a container. I didn't really have high hopes for it, I have to say. And this spring, early spring, I decided, you know, we were reorienting the garden spaces in the yard now that this big tree is gone. I created a new flower bed for the roses and planted all four of my bushes, also a couple more. The Plum Perfect is already just bursting. The last I looked, it had about 2 dozen blooms on it. So this is its second, I guess, would be technically its third spring in the ground. And it has just taken off compared to the other three bushes that were planted at the same time and kind of have gone through the same process. This one type has just gone crazy, and it is so beautiful. The color is this really muted purple plum color, and it kind of gets a little bit darker on the edges. They're gorgeous. They're big, open, double petaled roses. The bush itself is not huge still. It's like only 2.5 feet tall, maybe, and about 1.5 feet wide. And so it has a little bit more growing to do, but I've just been delighted. It was the first bush that blossomed this year and then has been continually blooming, and more roses keep opening on it. And I just, like, every time I look at it, I'm baffled and delighted and surprised and in awe of how beautiful it is. So if you're a rose gardener and you haven't tried a plum perfect rose, you have a spot for it. I highly recommend it. I'll link it in the show notes. And my third peak of the week, that is always a peak of the week and just something that I may have mentioned before, but I added another bird feeder to my bird feeding station in my backyard. And I just can't say enough good things about bringing your neighborhood birds into your yard where you can get to know them and you can take care of them and you can, you know, form little relationships with them. So many benefits to backyard birding and bringing a feeder onto your property where you're going to attract those local birds is really beneficial. I have two now that I love that are squirrel proof. One that I'm putting raw sunflower seeds and peanut mix into, and the other one that is black sunflower seeds that are shelled. A little bit different type of bird, like either one of those seeds. It's been so fun. We had the first goldfinch of the season the other day. You know, now that it's getting to spring, there's probably 2 to 3 dozen types of birds that I see regularly in my backyard because of the feeder. Love, love. I'll link both of them in the show notes if you're curious about them. I've had a couple other feeders, and these are the ones that I most highly recommend for a variety of reasons: ease, squirrel proofness, and being able to, you know, relatively easily feed a variety of birds. Those are the peaks of the week. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about the history of Mother's Day. It's a big holiday in the United States that can carry with it a lot of weight of expectation. I agree with my friend Jansen Bradshaw from Everyday Reading, who mentioned on her Instagram story a couple weeks ago in preparation for this upcoming holiday, that she thinks that depending on how you feel in your everyday life will bear some sort of correlation with how you feel about Mother's Day. For example, if you feel overrun, overworked, and invisible as a mom in your everyday life, there's probably a heavy weight around the idea of Mother's Day and how you want to be celebrated and how you feel like you kind of need to make up for that through this holiday. Where if you feel pretty balanced and fulfilled and satisfied within, you know, the normal ups and downs of everyday life and motherhood, Mother's Day doesn't feel like as big of a deal because you're not like waiting for it to make up for things that you lack in the systems of your everyday life. I think that I agree with that assessment and that opinion in general. I also think that there's a lot of different factors and stories that we bring into motherhood, both from the way that we learned to celebrate it growing up and just from our own understanding and willingness to share, recognize, and acknowledge our desires with other people. So let's just talk briefly about how this day even came to be. Celebrations of mothers and motherhood goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks and Romans, who held festivals and celebrations in honor of the mother goddesses, Rhea and Cybele. There were modern precedent for Mother's Day in early Christian festivals as well, particularly one that was the fourth Sunday of Lent that was known as Mothering Sunday. It was seen as a time when faithful Christians would return to their mother church or the main church in the vicinity of their home to celebrate a special service. So the idea of celebrating mothers and mother figures is not at all modern, although the way that we celebrate now in the United States dates back to the early 1900s when there was a woman in West Virginia named Anna Reeves Jarvis. She started something called Mother's Day Work Clubs to teach local women how to properly care for their children, like motherhood classes. That sounds kind of nice, doesn't it? Later on, these clubs became a unifying force in a country divided over the Civil War. In 1868, Jarvis organized something called Mother's Friendship Day, where mothers gathered with former Union and Confederate soldiers to promote reconciliation. The daughter of Anna Reeves Jarvis, whose name was also Anna Jarvis, continued her mother's efforts in wanting to bring together mothers, but her idea was a Mother's Day that honored the sacrifice that mothers made for their children. She originally gained financial backing from a Philadelphia department store owner named John Wanamaker, and in May 1908, she organized the first official Mother's Day celebration at a Methodist church in West Virginia. Also, a Wanamaker retail store in Philadelphia on the same day celebrated Mother's Day. Wanting to see further success of the celebration of Mother's Day, Jarvis, who I think is interesting, never married or had children of her own, started a massive letter-writing campaign to newspapers and politicians, urging the adoption of Mother's Day as a national holiday. And by 1912, there were lots of states, towns, and churches who had adopted it as an annual holiday themselves. And in 1914, Woodrow Wilson signed the measure officially establishing the second Sunday in May as Mother's Day. Anna Jarvis's original idea of Mother's Day was this personal celebration between mothers and families. The original symbol of Mother's Day was a white carnation. Anna Jarvis talked about this as a whiteness to symbolize the truth, purity, and broad charity of motherly love, her fragrance, her memory, and her prayers. The carnation does not drop its petals, but hugs them to its heart as it dies. And so too, mothers hug their children to their hearts, their mother love never dying. She said, "When I selected this flower, I was remembering my mother's bed of white pinks." So the original idea, according to Anna Jarvis, was gathering together with your family to celebrate the sacrifice and service and motherly love and donning a white carnation as a symbol of motherhood. Anna Jarvis was quickly disenchanted by how greeting card companies and floral companies in particular started to commercialize Mother's Day. She felt their commercialization of it overwhelmed the original message. She spent the latter half of her life organizing petitions to rescind Mother's Day because of her disillusionment with the way that it had been commercialized. In a kind of weird and interesting, possibly dark twist, in her later years, these efforts to reverse Mother's Day and, you know, the petition to remove it from the calendar were halted when she was admitted to a sanitarium in Pennsylvania, and people connected with the floral and greeting card industries paid the bills to keep her in the sanitarium, paid her medical bills until the end of her life. Wow, right? It seems that Mother's Day has had a complicated story and history even from its inception and from its adoption and then later commercialization. Maybe if you yourself have some complicated feelings around Mother's Day, maybe knowing that even the founder of Mother's Day herself had complicated feelings about the way that it should be celebrated will help you feel a little bit less alone. More than anything, I just liked a deep dive into some of the history of Mother's Day that I didn't know before. And I think that having just some context around what is kind of like an invented celebration that we ourselves get to choose how to celebrate, how to acknowledge what it means to us, what it symbolizes. If we want to add a lot of rituals and traditions and connection onto it, or if we don't, this is a good reminder that there isn't a right way to experience a holiday. There isn't a correct way to celebrate Mother's Day, even though it seems like there's maybe some traditions that feel culturally more widely or universally accepted or promoted. The ones that come to mind immediately for me are like breakfast in bed, flowers, chocolates, cards, gifts, mom taking the day off of household duties or mothering duties. All of those things can be great if you want them to be included in your own celebration of Mother's Day, or if you want to celebrate Mother's Day at all. I think that Mother's Day is also an interesting holiday because if you are a woman who's a mother, you are simultaneously celebrating or being thought of as yourself in your motherhood role, and also maybe trying to balance that with celebrating your mom and mother-in-law and grandmother and all of the motherly figures in your life. Maybe even you want to extend that to celebrate friends who are great examples of motherhood. And so the balance of being celebrated and celebrating, when the focus is this idea of the relationship and role and sacrifice of motherhood and mothers, it can be a little murky. I can see how it can get a little bit complicated. As we are thinking about Mother's Day, and this can apply to really any holiday, any celebration, Mother's Day just because it's present, I want you to consider the question, like back it all the way up to, do I want to celebrate this holiday? Does it feel significant to me? Either to celebrate my own mother or to celebrate myself as a mother or have other people celebrate me or for me to celebrate friends. What do you want your Mother's Day celebration to feel like? I remember when I was in my early adulthood, and I don't think I had had my own children yet. I was talking to my mom about Mother's Day, and she said, I've decided that I want Mother's Day for me to be a celebration of my motherhood. And so I'm going to celebrate my kids. I'm going to reach out to my kids and say, thank you so much for being great kids. I've loved being your mom. She had this idea of sort of reframing Mother's Day for her as an introspective reflection on the joys of being a mom. And that there wasn't a lot of expectation, at least at this time when she was telling me about this, there wasn't any expectation around the way she wanted others to celebrate her. She was reclaiming Mother's Day as a way to celebrate her own motherhood and to reflect on that and to be excited about it and to think about it and appreciate it. That seemed like a really healthy way to...
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well... That's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Think about what is within your full control around the holiday and to take advantage of your own desires and acknowledging and honoring your desires in your own way. That said, maybe your dream for Mother's Day is to be doted on hand and foot and for the chores to be done for you and for breakfast to be waiting and a beautiful bouquet of your favorite flowers to be delivered. That's all wonderful too. That's all great. The question still remains, how do you clarify and communicate those desires to others? And this is where the second half of this episode comes in that I think is really fascinating. We're going to talk for a little bit about mind reading as soon as we listen to a word from our sponsor. This episode of the Practically Happy podcast is brought to you by Factor Meals. It is no surprise that I'm a huge fan of a simple, delicious, nutritional meal. And Factor Meals makes my lunch times as easy as they've ever been. This is a no-prep, no-mess meal that is never frozen, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. It doesn't matter how busy you are, how many work calls you're taking that day, or errands you have to run, or lessons that you have to pack the car for, you have time for this nutritious, great-tasting meal. I have been looking forward to lunchtime ever since I started using Factor Meals as my lunch system. I can be out and about running an errand, and instead of zipping through a drive-thru or ducking into a deli, I look forward to coming home and pulling a Factor Meal out of my refrigerator, putting it in the microwave for 2 to 3 minutes. I like them really hot, so sometimes I go 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and then enjoying what I know is a nutritionally balanced, super high protein quality lunch. If you find yourself kind of wondering what to have for lunch every day, or if you don't have a solid, healthy, go-to lunch routine, I highly recommend Factor Meals. They're easily customizable. You can go in and choose the meals that you like. I like to choose the meals that have a baseline of at least 30 grams of protein, and Factor has a lot of protein-heavy, delicious meals to choose from. One of my very favorites is the jalapeno chicken. I also have been really liking the turkey chili. I like to grab a little handful of tortilla chips and like scoop the chili out like I'm eating nachos almost, like loaded nachos. And it's so good. I feel so good eating them. I feel like I'm taking care of myself and being taken care of at the same time. Head to factormeals.com/practically50 and use the code practically50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month's box. That's code practically50 at factormeals.com/practically50 to get 50% off your first box plus an additional 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Find the link to take advantage of this deal in the show notes for today's episode. I hope that you enjoy. Say happy Mother's Day to yourself by trying Factor Meals right now. Mind reading. Does it feel like sometimes you just wish that other people could read your mind? Or have you heard the idea that it's not realistic to expect your partner or your children or your parents to read your mind? You need to tell people what you're thinking. Something you may find kind of interesting is that mind reading, to some extent, is an appropriate developmental process that most of us learn when we're in our early childhood. It's not called mind reading then, it's called theory of mind. This theory refers to our ability to understand that other people have beliefs, desires, intentions, and perspectives that might be different from our own. Theory of mind is a concept in psychology that helps us understand how people think and perceive the world around them as individuals. It's important to recognize that everyone has their own thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. While this seems so obvious, sometimes we can get caught in the idea that the way that we experience the world is the same for the other people around us. This can be particularly true for people living in our same household with whom we have relationships that we think, you were there too. You saw and experienced this the same way that I did. It's easy to think that we know what they're thinking because of having experienced what feels like the same experience. However, theory of mind helps us realize that other people have different thoughts and experiences and beliefs than we do. It also helps us realize that these internal states can influence people's behavior and interactions. One key aspect of theory of mind is what's called perspective taking. This involves putting yourself into someone else's shoes and imagining how they might think or feel given a certain situation. This is a skill that most of us are taught when we're in elementary school. We learn how to put on someone else's experience and try to imagine the world through their eyes. We do this often through reading fiction books as well. Perspective taking as a practice can widen our own understanding of how other people are experiencing the world. It gives us the ability to empathize a little bit more deeply and understand people's motivations a little bit more clearly. People's actions are often guided by their personal beliefs and desires, and theory of mind can help us understand that someone may act based on what they believe is true or what they want to achieve. If you feel like you don't understand where someone's coming from, trying to put together a whole story of like what else might be going on can help you start to get into their mind and make more sense of the things that they're choosing. Now, social interactions also come into play when we're talking about this theory of mind. We use theory of mind or this, you know, mind reading technique, this idea in all of our social interactions, trying to navigate social cues, picking up on what other people might be thinking or feeling, reading a room. All of those things are, in a sense, us mind reading, trying to understand what other people are thinking and feeling and how our actions may come into play with the way that this situation might develop. Theory of mind typically develops in childhood, where we might understand that other people might have beliefs separate than our own, that different people have different perspectives. And it's a really important part of growing up, being able to see that the way that we see the world is not the only way that the world is. As we become older, as we grow into adulthood, we may start to conflate theory of mind or the ability to understand some pieces of what other people may be experiencing with the idea of mind reading, that we know what someone is thinking, that we create a story in our mind about what they believe or how they're acting and why. And we also can use it against ourselves in sort of this backwards order by expecting that because we are able to pick up some of those social cues and have a perspective of what someone else might be thinking, we expect clearly that those around us are able to do the same thing in clear detail with our minds, that our parents or our children or our husband or wife must be able to understand that with Mother's Day approaching, that we want a day off, that we want a particular gift, that we want to be treated, that we want something significant to happen, that we want at minimum a card. We want them to use their theory of mind, developmentally appropriate ability to contextually understand that other people have different perspectives, to the superpower degree of understanding exactly what we want and how, which is crossing the line from reality and developmentally appropriate into sort of dreamland. Unfortunately, although most neurotypical develop the ability to understand that other people have thoughts and perspectives and beliefs different from their own, and are even able to some degree, put themselves into other people's shoes and get a fuller picture of what someone else might be experiencing, most of us cannot read other people's minds to the degree that allows us to interpret their exact desires and expectations of us. Man, it would make life and relationships so much easier if this were possible. However, it isn't possible. So what do we know then? If we can understand about each other enough to have good relationships and to build relationships and understand that we all have different perspectives and ideas, we also might be able to understand that if we want someone to know something particular, we might need to communicate it specifically, rather than expecting others to not only understand us and our hearts and, you know, have a relationship with us, but read our minds. We may need to understand that communication, clear communication, is the best way to help someone have a real specific insight into our desires. I was curious what John Gottman, who is a relationship researcher and expert, might say about this idea of a woman who's frustrated about Mother's Day, that her family isn't doing what she wants, or she doesn't know how to communicate those desires to her family. I was curious, if I asked ChatGPT, what would John Gottman say to this woman in giving her expert advice? I was curious what would happen. And this is, I want to read the answer because I think it's really helpful. So this is ChatGPT speaking as John Gottman, the researcher. As John Gottman, renowned relationship expert, I would emphasize the importance of expressing your needs and desires to your partner in a clear and constructive manner. While it's natural to desire special gestures on occasions like Mother's Day, it's also crucial to communicate your expectations openly and honestly. Firstly, I would encourage this woman to reflect on what doing something special means to her. Is it receiving a heartfelt card, enjoying a relaxing day together, or perhaps a thoughtful gesture that acknowledges her role as a mother? Understanding her own expectations can help her articulate her desires much more effectively to her partner. Next, I would stress the significance of open communication within the relationship. Instead of harboring frustration or resentment, it's vital for her to express her feelings to her husband in a non-confrontational manner. She can share with him why Mother's Day holds significance for her and how she envisions celebrating together. Additionally, I would advise her to consider her husband's perspective and communication style. He may not be aware of her expectations or may have a different idea of how to celebrate occasions like Mother's Day. By engaging in empathetic communication, they can work together to find a mutually satisfying way to honor the day. Furthermore, I would highlight the importance of appreciation and gratitude in fostering a strong relationship. Expressing gratitude for the efforts her husband or partner does make, even if they may not align with her expectations, can create a positive atmosphere and further encourage efforts in the future. Ultimately, I would remind her that building a fulfilling relationship requires ongoing effort and understanding from both partners. By openly communicating her needs, expressing appreciation, and working together with her partner, they can create meaningful and memorable celebrations that honor her role as a mother. Thank you, ChatGPT, as John Gottman. I have to say, the reason I got the idea to even feed a prompt like this to ChatGPT is because one of my professors last year, who is renowned psychologist Martin Seligman, said that he has been playing with ChatGPT, and because he has such a breadth of research that's published in his language, like his words, his papers, his books are part of what ChatGPT can read, he recognized that ChatGPT can answer questions on his behalf as thoroughly as he might. And he's done it several times and has said, ChatGPT as me gives answers to questions that I find even more satisfying than I would give right now because of the, you know, real breadth of written works that it can scan. So it's kind of a fun prompt to use this idea of like, what would this well-published person say about this question? Because ChatGPT does a really good job of pulling together resources from that person's written perspective. All of that to say, I think that ChatGPT as John Gottman did a really great job here of explaining that in order to begin communicating our desires and, you know, stepping away from expecting someone else to read our minds, we need to first know our own minds. What is it that we want? How do we want to celebrate? What do our desires look like? If we were to create, you know, an ideal way to celebrate Mother's Day, what would that look like? That has to come first, because if we have a vague understanding of what we want or how we want to celebrate, it's going to be really difficult to communicate that. I like to write some of these things down. What do I want to do? How do I want to feel? What are some of the things that I've done in the past that have helped me feel that way? Do I want to spend time with my family, or do I want to spend time alone and have, you know, Mother's Day feel like a break for me? I think it can be helpful to consider what you think about gifts at Mother's Day. Do you like the idea of receiving gifts? If so, is there something in particular that you would like? Could you share those links or those ideas with your family members that you would hope, you know, buy those things for you? Or are you comfortable saying, I'm going to treat myself this Mother's Day to something, because then I don't want to ask someone to get it for me. It seems silly to do that, so I'm just going to do it for myself. All of these things are valid and totally okay. What do you want? How do you want to celebrate? And then how do you communicate that clearly? Another thing that I think is interesting is considering if you have a mother or mother figures that you want to celebrate this year, maybe asking them in advance, rather than trying to read their minds about what they might like or how they'd like to be celebrated, asking, hey, how would you like me to celebrate you this year for Mother's Day? I know that there is a big barrier in our minds, this obstacle that it takes away from the thought to ask, that if we don't come up spontaneously with a wonderful gift or a great way to celebrate, that somehow that takes away from the intent. And I want to challenge that thought. Perhaps it's even more thoughtful to ask what someone's preferences are or how they might like to celebrate in order to not only celebrate them in a way that they prefer, but also invite them to consider their own desires, which is something that women far often don't do. I do want to mention that you may be thinking, as I know I've thought sometimes in the past, that having to express my own desires for the way that I would like to celebrate on Mother's Day feels like I'm then planning and doing all of the work. I totally get that. I've had years where I've told Dave, I don't actually care at all what happens. I would like you to do something. I would like to feel celebrated, but I don't have the bandwidth this year to like even get in touch with exactly what that might look like. Know though that when you go in again with unclear expectations, that the emotional work after is being really open and grateful for whatever happens if you didn't go in with a clear idea. Something else that can come into play in this conversation is the idea that spending some time when you don't feel like you're emotionally overdrawn to think about this. How do I want to celebrate? What does a beautiful Mother's Day celebration look like to me? And coming up with some traditions around that, some things that you'd like to try out repeating a couple times, that can give you this sort of wonderful baseline to return to so that you don't have to come up with something new. It doesn't have to always be different. And you can say, this is kind of what we do for Mother's Day. And as long as you're involved in the process of planning that and designing that experience, when you're in a place to get in touch with your desires, it can be a really nice way to kind of set it and forget it. After this entire episode, you know, 40 minutes of talking about Mother's Day and communicating desires around Mother's Day, maybe a kind of a funny time to note that I don't have really strong feelings about Mother's Day myself. I remember liking celebrating it growing up. I think that we did some fun things for my mom sometimes. I don't feel like it was a real strong day on the calendar. I also have felt that way in my life. I like Mother's Day. I thought it was really fun when my kids were young that there were often Mother's Day programs at school and, you know, songs and things like that going on. But I haven't held it to a really high level of expectation in my own life because it just doesn't feel that dramatically important to me. And maybe some of that has to do with what Jansen had said that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, that I put a lot of work into trying to make sure that I'm feeling whole in my motherhood, to refer to last week's episode, every day of the year, that I am trying to balance out fulfilling myself as well as fulfilling this relationship, having hobbies, having time off, building in space for me to exist within the context of my own family. And so Mother's Day feels fun. It feels like it can be something extra to celebrate, and it doesn't feel really heavy to me. My favorite way to celebrate the last few years has been to take a couple days off where either Dave takes the kids to a hotel for a night or two, or this year Dave and I both are going and spending a night away, which can seem kind of ironic, the celebration of motherhood by spending some time away from being a mom for a couple days. Feels great to me. So that's been something that we have put on the calendar the last few years, and it just feels like a nice time, especially, you know, the weather's really nice. It feels like a good time of year to have a little escape. So that's the main thing that we do to celebrate. And even putting this episode together, I've been, you know, reflecting myself on how do I want to celebrate the mothers in my life? I can probably do a better job of that. Like I said, because I haven't put a huge emphasis on Mother's Day, I haven't been incredibly consistent with a particular way to celebrate my mom and mothers-in-law and friends that are mothers that I admire in my life. So I'm going to put some thought into that and maybe build some clarity around the way that I would like to celebrate other mothers on Mother's Day, in addition to, you know, recognizing and communicating how I would like to be celebrated. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, maybe learned something new about Mother's Day, and gained some new perspectives about why we think other people might be able to read our minds, and in fact that they are unable to, how we can become better communicators of the things that we desire in Mother's Day and in life. I hope this tool helps you feel a little bit more practically happy this Mother's Day, and I will chat with you again next time. Bye-bye.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.